We are now live on the Conversations That Matter podcast. Let me know if the audio is sounding good out there, please, in the comments. This is an unannounced podcast. Well, I let the patrons know probably 4 hours or 5 hours ago that I would try to do something around five. So it's 5:30 now, 5:35, I guess. And I they're the only ones, I guess, who knew. So we have people starting to come into the stream here, but if you are listening and you're just coming in, please let me know if the audio sounds good, because I'm still getting used to this semi-new setup that I have. Anyway, we have a lot to talk about today. We are going to talk about Pete Hegseth a little bit and some of the things surrounding that regarding the Christian nationalist debate, if you want to call it that. And I mean, that's what NPR calls it, right? We're going to talk a little bit about the Southern Baptist Convention and what's going on, the latest on the whole alleged abuse crisis or abuse prevention efforts and how that's going. Not too well, I'll put it that way. And let's also talk about the Gospel Coalition. They just elected, actually, I don't know how they do this. Elected, selected, I guess the board probably met and they selected a new president. Mark Rogop, and I have talked about him actually before on this podcast. I was trying to look back to find episodes to see where I did that, but I couldn't find them. I know I have, because I remember this is years ago now, but someone from that church had told me, who knew Mark, he said, "Mark is not like you, John." I said, "Yeah, why is that?" And I guess it had something to do with I had said something against Mark, and I don't remember what it was exactly. I know it has to do with woke stuff. I know he went pretty hard woke, but we're going to talk about that a little bit. And that's there's more, but that's mostly it. And one of the things about these news roundup episodes where I have a number of things I want to talk about that I've just been saving for perhaps a week or two, sometimes longer. I want to keep it open. And you know, I take questions on most podcasts, but in this particular one, I really want people to feel free to ask any question they want to ask about current issues or things that are ongoing. And obviously I'll use my discretion as to whether that's something that the whole audience would be interested in, but feel free to leave a comment on Facebook, on YouTube, or on X. I will see them on either or all three of those. So with that, no one's saying anything about the audio, so I'm assuming it's coming through okay. Hopefully that continues. We are going to start with, I have an announcement. Okay, we'll start with an announcement, and then we're going to get into the Hegseth stuff, I suppose. So here's the announcement. I need to keep pushing this because I have multiple communications with the church in Shelbyville, Kentucky, telling me this is the last week for their early bird sale for the conference coming up with A.D. Robles and myself called the Reformation War Room. This is for men. It's on March 1st, 2025. It's a Saturday event. So I'm also going to be preaching actually at that church. So March 2nd, I'll be in Shelbyville as well. And yeah, look forward to that. But while I'm at it, I might as well let you know that February 21st through 22nd, I will be in Vancouver, Washington, which is right near Portland, Oregon, at the Political Christianity Menace or Mandate Conference. You can check that out, johnharrispodcast.com. Go to speaking and you'll find all of the links. I will also be at, let's see, the Right Response Conference in Temple, Texas, April 3rd through 5th. I will also be at the Christianity and the Founding Conference in Selins Grove, Pennsylvania, April 25th through 26th. You definitely want to go to that if you are anywhere near the area. It's going to be a great time. It's a really good price, and there's also a VIP dinner that you're going to want to be at, and that'll give you a chance to talk to me in a more informal setting. So go check out the link. You could also go to ChristianityandTheFounding.com. And then the Truth Conference, Mount Laurel, New Jersey, May 2nd through 4th. And after this Wednesday, I'm going to be adding another May date in Florida. So I'll let you know about that when I have more information on it. But yeah, things are filling up and it's great. I'm looking forward to all of this because I have a number of new projects that hopefully I'll be able to take with me. It's going to cut it close with the whole February 21st through 22nd thing. I'm not sure if I'll have everything that I have coming out for that conference in Vancouver, but I have an album, a music album coming out, and that's, You can go to johnharristunes.com for updates on that. But we are still on track for a February 1st release of that album. And I've heard some of the good tracks that Tim Bushong's been the one mixing some of this, and it sounds great. And also, I have a new book hopefully coming out. So I let the patrons know a little bit. It's going to come out, but the timing is the question. So I told the patrons earlier today some of the things I'm investigating in regard to publishing, and we'll see. If I do the route I'm thinking of possibly doing, then we could have it very quickly. So we'll see what happens with that, but I'll have more information. Anyway, that's it for announcements. We got to start some actual content here, and we'll start here. I just want to reflect on this because I just thought this is such a great thing to see. This is Pete Hegseth, and it is at the confirmation hearing for being the director of the Department of Defense. And this is what he says at one point. And let me know again, everyone listening, you know, whether the audio is coming through here.
And as Jenny and I pray together every morning, all glory, regardless of the outcome, belongs to our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. His grace and mercy abounds each day. May his will be done.
All right. So there you go. I mean, it's just a little clip, but how often do you hear that kind of thing? I mean, you don't even hear God thanked at award shows anymore. It used to be at award shows. In fact, there was a comedian who joked about this recently, that even television and, you know, movie, like the Golden Globes or the Emmys or Grammys, you hear someone thank God, at least generically, sometimes Jesus Christ. At country music award shows, you definitely, when I was younger, heard Jesus Christ thanked. You don't hear it anymore much. And to hear someone who's actually going to be the defense secretary say this in a public forum is very encouraging. Now, Pete Hegseth is a member of the CREC, and that's the same denomination, or at least a church in that Doug Wilson is in, for those who want a recognizable name. And I thought it was interesting that I think it was right around this time, NPR released this. Someone turned me on to this and said, you should check this out. So I'm going to play this, and we'll see if, yeah, people saying audio is good. Good, good, good. Okay. Let's hope that continues. So I'm going to play this from NPR, and I want you to just listen. This is recent. This was January 12th. So it's 5 days ago. So in anticipating that, I think Pete Hegseth from this denomination, and also, by the way, I should also mention guys like Russ Vaught, who is at, what is his position? He's also a very faithful Christian. He's in, I think he's doing accounting or something. Like, well, that sounds so terrible. I should look this up just to make sure I have the right office listed here. Let me just make sure. Russ Vaught. It's a very authoritative office. He's not an accountant. It's Office of Management and Budget. That's what it is. Office of Management and Budget. So he's a very strong Christian, Southern Baptist, as I understand it. So anyway, NPR puts this out ahead of these nominations from Donald Trump. And this is what they have to say about theocrats on the doorsteps of power. That's the name of this show, or the episode from Up First from NPR. So it's, I guess, their weekend show. So here's what they have to say at one portion of this show, theocrats on the doorsteps of power.
Next Trump term. We'll be right back. We're back with Heath Druzin talking about his podcast, Extremely American, which takes this deep dive into Christian nationalism and talks to the practitioners of it who are very open about it. One thing that I was struck by in the excerpt that we just heard is that they want the nation to be run under this idea of Christianity or Christ. That's where I get a little confused because I'm a Christian and I grew up in a very conservative church, but I guess I want to get some clarity on what these specific Christian nationalists, when they're talking about a Christian government, like, what does that actually look like to them?
Yeah, in the view of the Christian nationalists I talk to, it's an extremely narrow view of what Christianity can be. it's a Protestant view of it. And even more than that, really, if you're outside of the sort of Calvinist Baptist umbrella, then they don't really consider you Christian. So if you're Catholic, if you're Mormon, you're still in the out-group in their very narrow view of what a Christian America would look like.
Yeah, the other part of this that I think is, you know, very interesting is that there was like another very pro-U.S. and Protestant movement in the 1920s, and that was like the Ku Klux Klan, right? Where to be American was to be white and to be Protestant, right? Like that was a part of this, right? Like that was a part of what it meant. And obviously now the Klan was a terrorist organization, but I just wonder, how does whiteness interact with this movement?
Yeah, it's a pretty white movement. And Doug Wilson, who leads Christchurch, he co-wrote a pamphlet called Southern Slavery as It Was, which very much whitewashed the evils of slavery and painted the Confederacy as the victims. So there's some serious baggage there. And there's some real infighting and a bit of a civil war going on within the Christian nationalist movement. I've gone kind of down the rabbit hole and seen some people go to some dark places, mostly on the platform X, where there are elements of Christian nationalism who have really embraced anti-Semitism and racism. They've basically just like embraced alternative theories about the Holocaust and slavery. And then there's people kind of, it's a weird thing to say, but like the moderate Christian nationalists.
They're a little more moderate. Okay,
right, yeah. Right. And they're like pushing back like, whoa. We don't like being quote unquote woke, but you guys are going too far and you're putting a stain on the movement. There is a big battle going on inside the movement between the folks who see not being woke as actually being racist and the other people who are like, no, that's not what we're about. You guys need to get your head straight.
Okay, so there's not many things I want to say about this, and I apologize for putting you through that. And your ears are bleeding. I know. I understand. There's a few points I wanted to make, though. One is that I want you to notice the fact that you do have major media. This is NPR. Trying to go, he said, go down the rabbit hole. They're trying to figure out what's happening in Christian right circles. I think this would be beyond just Christian nationalism. That's obviously the term they're using. And so just realize that too, when you're online, when you're interacting with political things, there's people being paid by the left to try to figure out what's going on. They're very interested in the movement, which also means that if they're doing this kind of thing, there's no reason to think they wouldn't be attempting to derail the movement, attack the movement, which means infiltrate the movement. And I've wondered sometimes when I have talked to some people or some people have reached out to me in the past on either Messenger or X, whether or not I'm actually talking to someone who admires the podcast, who might even be a Christian, or whether it's someone who's a Fed or someone who's in the media trying to covertly find stuff out. I just want to put that warning out there, guys. There is this focus, even though you think you're in perhaps this off the beaten path realm of the internet talking about certain things, there's people watching. So that's one thing. Just be careful. The other thing is, if you notice in that little clip I played, there's only one identifiable figure that's brought up, and that's Doug Wilson, which who is not a Baptist. He said before, a Calvinist Baptist. It's very narrow. Obviously, Doug Wilson's not a Baptist, but he is, you know, I wouldn't expect people from NPR to know these kind of differences. But he's the scary guy, right? And that's the only thing they need to mention. They don't need to mention anything else. I mean, I'm assuming they could have used other things he said, but all they need to say is, look, he's got a view on slavery or a view on the Confederacy that is out of step with the prevailing neo-abolitionist narrative, which is the prevailing interpretation today. And that's it. You're done, right? This is this dark, dark thing. For the other examples, he doesn't give any names. He doesn't give any figures. It's just like this shroud of darkness that paints the whole thing. And they're going to do this no matter what. I think it doesn't matter if you say new Christian right, or as someone said this week, we should call it resurgent Christian right, because we're just trying to go back to real conservatism or something. Okay. It doesn't matter what you call it. This is what the media is going to do, obviously. So why pay attention to them, John? Well, I don't really. I don't. Someone sent me that clip, and I just thought every once in a while it's good to know how they're, what they're thinking about us. And I mean us in the sense of Christians who want to be involved in political things, because they see that as a threat. And it's good to, I think, understand their strategies and not be taken in by them and so forth. So this is happening at a time when you have someone from Doug Wilson's denomination as the head of the department, or will be the head of the Secretary of Defense. And you have other Christians that are going to populate this administration. And this is what the media is going to do with those guys as we continue. You saw it with the Hegseth process. I mean, you had people that were, you know, senators like Gillibrand, who I'm going to show you one of her quotes in a moment, who really got on to him. And this is one of the paths they tried to go down, and painting him as this extreme figure of some kind. So be prepared. Obviously, we've lived through a first Trump presidency, but I think this one's going to be a little different in that it, you know, they focus on white nationalism and these kinds of things. But the last year, especially, I've seen Christian nationalism being the big boogeyman. That's what they're going to do, I think, to anyone of any, with any authority who's a Christian in the government. So my perception there. I'm going to take a few questions, I guess, because I see comments coming in, and then we'll keep going. Or comments. You spoke, this is from B. Babin. You spoke of Mark Rogop when the Woke Lament video came out a few years ago. That's right. I remember this. Mark is big into the white guilt message. That is right. Yeah, TGC had this whole lament session on racial violence or something like that, right? And so Mark was involved in that. You're absolutely right. That was the maybe the only time that I talked about Mark, but at least was one of the times. Okay, come on, Jobs. My ears are hurt. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, people get upset when I play too much of a leftist on the podcast. You didn't come here to hear that. I know. Okay, I wanted to, let's switch. Oh, no, we're not going to switch gears entirely. Let's talk about this, I said, from Kirsten Gillibrand. So this is something Biden did today, if you can believe this. President Biden just declared that the Equal Rights Amendment is now a valid part of the Constitution. I kid you not. He actually said it's part of the Constitution and should be considered the law of the land. This is an incredible moment for reproductive freedom and a historic day for equality, especially with Americans facing the further degradation of reproductive freedom as the incoming administration takes power. Now, women living in states with restrictions on their reproductive freedoms can and should file suits to overturn these unconstitutional laws that discriminate on the basis of sex. I know they will have ample support as they seek justice, and I promise to stand by their side in the fight. And this is in response, or quote tweeting, President Biden, who said, "Today, I am affirming that I have long believed, and what 3/4 of the states have ratified, the 28th Amendment is the law of the land, guaranteeing all Americans equal rights and protections under the law, regardless of their sex." So the readers, so there, this was community noted, of course. The National Archivist, who is responsible for enrolling new amendments, has stated that the ERA has not been lawfully ratified, citing a legal opinion drafted by the Biden Justice Department's Office of Legal Counsel in 2022, confirming this position. So this is interesting to me. I haven't looked into all the details of this. I think this is probably more symbolic than anything else, because Joe Biden can't just say we have an amendment that's ratified. But, you know, obviously he's on his way out, and he's trying to say that, you know, this is part of the Constitution, and you got Democrats trying to, I guess, back him up on that. I don't think this is going to stand up to legal scrutiny. But here's the thing. This just shows you how much of a bullet we dodged. And I really want those who did not vote for Trump, and I understand some of the reasons people did not do that, especially those from the abortion abolitionist crowd who were concerned very much so about Trump's softness on abortion. realize the bullet that we just dodged. This is the state of the Democrat Party. This is the agenda of Biden and Harris, I think, would have probably even been more aggressive. They were in defense for the last year. Remember that. They were in defense because he had to win an election. But when they have their druthers and they can do what they want, what do? It's this kind of stuff. So they are dead set on enshrining Roe v. Wade and abortion on demand and all of that. Let's switch gears. Let's talk about the Gospel Coalition a little bit, just a little bit. And I think the reason that we should talk about this is because it is a signal to us that the Gospel Coalition is not changing their mind when it comes to their enthusiasm, maybe more so in the past, you might say, but I've seen things even more recently that I would say line up with this for being positive towards wokeness, social justice, that kind of stuff. And to put Mark Rogop in this position as the new president, I think actually illustrates this, that he's never, and I confirm this, by the way, I mean, he has not apologized, he hasn't retracted, he hasn't admitted he was wrong on any of what he did. And this is and I'll show you that in a minute, some of it. The Gospel Coalition announced this a few days ago, and it's an odd thing. I don't know why they did this, but they put a video out there. This is their Twitter or their X interaction, right? I've heard the Gospel Coalition is growing and they're getting more finances. That may be true because millennials are ascending to a point where they actually have money to donate. And I think Gospel Coalition is a total millennial, especially older millennial organization. That's what they are. And I think they're going to be stuck there. That's my prediction. And it could be that millennials have more money and they're giving more, but look, 10 likes, 2 retweets.
You and I share,
this is a video that they put out about Mark Rogop talking about toxic masculinity in his balanced way. And I listened to it. I'm not going to play it for you because I don't want your ears to bleed more. But it was just curious why I put this out there. And he's concerned that some men are getting too masculine and not, you know, they think it's not, you shouldn't cry. And fathers telling their sons at sporting events not to cry and stuff, but he also, you know, he's balanced. So he went the other direction and, you know, you got to be able to play hard when you're playing a sport. You can't just be passive. So it was super 7 minutes of blah, I didn't really learn anything. I didn't find it helpful, but Gospel Coalition puts out a lot of stuff like that, in my opinion. Anyway, that's what they chose to release in conjunction with this announcement. Weird. Okay. All right. But that's, I guess what Mark is against toxic masculinity. Well, here's, this caught my eye. This is a guy, on X. It's at @totally_Brandon. So his name is Brandon. And he used to attend the church that Mark, pastors. And this is what he said. The Gospel Coalition has appointed a new president, and I used to attend his church. Let me share some highlights from the last sermon series before I left. One People, it was called. I was effectively it was a 3-week struggle session about white privilege. So he's got screenshots and everything. It's called College Park Church. I think it's near Chicago, if I'm not mistaken. He says, and he has quotes from here. So things like this. How long, O Lord, will my white brothers and sisters not understand the pain in those whose experience is different than ours? How long, O Lord, will my minority brothers and sisters struggle with distrust and feel misunderstood and ostracized? The economic machine created by Europeans was expanding at a torrid pace, and its dark secret was its reliance on slave labor as its primary fuel. The horror of slavery was a major moral crisis for America, but instead of acknowledging the sin of that enterprise, we went into the opposite direction. We began to de-emphasize the difference within various European ethnicities and began to describe white people as human collective that was inherently superior to people of color. And it goes, it's just over and over quotes similar to what I've just described from Mark. I began weeping in his office. And when my African-American coworker asked him what was going on, he said, our brother just saw something he has never seen before. And he was right. And he says, our friend gets woke to the African-American experience. He will shed many more tears. And it's everything, you know, from 2020. It's the whole standpoint theory, where, you know, white people don't have the right perspective and they need to struggle to obtain these oppressed perspectives. And this is somehow part of our Christianity. And it's incumbent on us to repent, even if we've never participated in anything sinful because we're white. It's all of that. And it just cuts through. I mean, there's so many more quotes here, and it's all like it literally is all of it. It really is. It's the whole kit and caboodle. And this is Mark. And this is Mark in the context of the Sunday morning service. So I believe this is a Sunday. Yeah, this is a Sunday teaching series that I guess this is part of. I guess he brought in some woke guys to do talks. So what does it say? Micah Edmondson was one of them, I think. And what else? Oh, H.B. Charles comes up in this. You know, I've never really understood the thing with H.B. Like, some guys really like him who aren't woke and stuff. And I've always thought, like, he had nominated Al Mohler, if I'm not mistaken, right? He was the guy that did that last time. I know he speaks at Shepherd's Conference and that kind of stuff, but I've always thought he's got a soft spot for the woke stuff. All right. Well, I'm not going to read through all of this. This just keeps going and going and going. I thought Jarvis Williams came up in here somewhere. Oh, there it is. They invited Jarvis Williams to do a church conference on race. Well, there you go. I mean, Jarvis Williams, I've talked about him on the podcast before. Literally every facet of critical race theory, Jarvis Williams embraces. There, you could say that he doesn't embrace the atheism that undergirds it or something, but, you know, as far as like the actual teachings, like, you know, the memory studies, standpoint theory, the idea that, you know, racism doesn't ever really go away. It just changes forms. The color blindness is racism, you know, all of it. He embraces the whole thing. So that's Mark. And they're making him now, he's the president of the Gospel Coalition. And so, you know, like, why bring this stuff up, John, from when was this, 2020 or something? Well, I bring it up to just say, look, I understand people say things they regret later. I mean, this is a big one. This is a big boo-boo, if you want to put it that way. But this is someone who hasn't owned this stuff. He hasn't repented of it. There's no evidence to indicate he thinks that this was a problem. And this is done publicly. Some of this done in conjunction with the Gospel Coalition. And I think this is a double down. This is the Gospel Coalition saying, we know we've gotten all this pushback for our woke stuff, and we don't really care. We're going, this is who we're going to make. We're not changing directions at all, which is unfortunate, I guess, because, you know, Gospel. I mean, I don't know if they have potential. Their brand is so tarnished, unfortunately, at this point. But they're, you know, don't expect Gospel Coalition to be making any major changes. Okay, let's turn to the Southern Baptist Convention, and then I'll take some questions at the end, or comments, or cries of outrage. So this was interesting to me a little bit. So Johnny Hunt, as some of you know, because I've talked about it, is in a lawsuit with the Southern Baptist Convention, and I guess Guidepost Solutions also. So they brought in Guidepost Solutions to assess the level of sexual abuse happening in their convention and so forth. And Johnny Hunt, of course, was in this report, and Johnny Hunt claims the report's wrong, and I'm not going to go into all of that. There, it is weird to me a little bit, though. So where's the kernel here? This is the headline, right? Hunt reveals $610,000 salary, seeks millions in relief from the cooperative program. He was making $610,000. And I think Will McCraney might've been the one that actually sent this to me. Someone's texted this to me a little while ago and just said, did you know he was making this much? So the pastor of Woodstock Baptist Church in Georgia, that must've been what he was making. He was also, let's see, senior vice president for evangelism and leadership with the North American Mission Board as well. So he was seeking, you know, damages. He wants to be compensated because of the way he was Me Too'd. 11 years of lost salary and employment benefits, book sales, speaking engagements, and other lost income totaling $15.4 million. Wow. Additionally, he offered that his reputational harm was valued between $30 and $45 million, and that the cost of his emotional distress amounted to another $30 million to $45 million. Well, congratulations, Southern Baptist. He wins any of this, and he's been doing pretty well. You'll be paying some of this. You will be paying with your tithes and offerings because, well, in part of it is because the Southern Baptist Convention did something incredibly foolish. He also indicated that he would seek punitive damage award in the amount to be determined by the jury and reasonable attorney fees and costs. Notably, he listed his lost salary and benefits at $610,000 a year. Over $500,000 a year. That it's just a little startling to me that he was making this much money. Like it makes you wonder the bigwigs in the SBC, what are they making? And I've heard this for years. People have told me, even guys, ex-executive committee guys who don't want to go on the record, but they'll say, yeah, it's people are getting rich. There's all these sweet deals going on, people drawing multiple salaries sometimes because they're on, you know, they have this position with this entity and also drawing from the church and they don't have to do anything in this position. It's crazy. And I think there is one way to look at this whole abuse crisis, allegedly, and see motivation to slay the golden goose, to look at the SBC as this big pocket of money that's there for the taking. And, you know, if we run it into the ground, who's going to get the leftovers? I hate to say that. I know I've said it before, and other people like Randy Adams has, in a more judicious way, said as much about the way the SBC is run. But sometimes the golden rule applies, meaning those with the gold rules and they're after the gold. And you know, there could be a lot of that I think motivates. And it gives you a little window into how the elites in the SBC, some of them at least, what they're making. Crazy, right? And I don't have a problem with people making money. I don't have I think that if you can make money and use it for good purposes, you should. But it's a little shocking when you find out how much like a pastor makes. I don't think pastors should be even kept in poverty necessarily. But you know, Johnny Hunt, to me, like, John, is he really this big, big name? Is he like MacArthur, I would think, has millions coming in because of all his books and stuff. Johnny Hunt, really? I wouldn't think so. But the salary, I mean, we're not even talking about that. We're talking about a salary, $610,000. That's crazy to me. Maybe some of you disagree with that. I'm open to correction, but that surprised me. Okay, let's talk about this. This is what I wanted to get to. So this is really, I think, a big deal. This highlights the failure of the executive committee of the SBC's approach to this whole alleged abuse crisis, which, as we talked about before, isn't really an abuse crisis. It doesn't mean abuse doesn't happen. It does. But to call it a crisis, to say that it's, you know, we're just like the Catholic Church, it's just like other organizations that have real problems. You know, I know Megan Basham's run some of the numbers on this, and you know, that's like, you know, it's a very small number of pastors in this decentralized denomination that have been convicted, at least, of sexual abuse and so forth. But what has happened is one of the strategies that they've employed is trying to create a database of potential sexual predators that is beyond the normal legal databases that exist out there. So normally, you know, what are the conservatives said from the beginning? You have a sexual predator in your church. Who do you call? You call the police. But the Me Too folks have wanted, no, in addition or along with, you should have this database. Maybe you can't call the police or something. It's not to that level. But if we have a reporting system where you could anonymously report someone, then we'll have this way to prevent abuse. Well, let's see how this is played out. The SBC Court of the Tennessee Court of Appeals just rendered a decision, and they affirmed part of the trial court's decision to deny an SBC motion. Let me back up here. The case is about this guy named Preston Gardner, who was on staff at a church, and there was an anonymous tip that said he had a history of sexually abusing others, apparently. So the SBC executive committee reports that to the church. He loses his job. Now he's seeking compensation. And so they affirm this decision by the lower court The Tennessee Court of Appeals affirms this decision, denying the SBC's motion to dismiss on the grounds that the ecclesiastical abstention doctrine did not apply to the defamation and false light claims. So they wanted to say essentially that because this is an ecclesiastical setting, they're shielded from having to take responsibility for whatever damages this individual has incurred because of their reporting. And the trial court said, no, you can't do that. The court found that these claims could be adjudicated without delving into religious doctrine. So this isn't a matter of faith. This is a matter of job and employment particularities. Despite the SBC's argument that the doctrine should protect them, Preston Gardner lost his employment at Everett Hills Baptist Church after the SBC's credentials committee sent a letter based on an anonymous tip alleging Gardner had a history of abuse, specifically mentioning an old claim from another church. The court also affirmed that Gardner established a prima facie case for defamation and false light, allowing the case to proceed to trial. Additionally, the SBC's request for attorney fees was denied since the legal action was not dismissed. This case could indeed become costly for the SBC, as many have anticipated. So what many have predicted about the SBC trying to handle their alleged abuse crisis the way that they're doing is coming to pass. It's a mess. And it's no surprise that they've already had to sell their main building, that they're liquidating assets because these attorney fees will and are killing them. And if you're in the Southern Baptist Convention, there's really only one option. And it's to stop. This whole thing needs to stop. Don't do this anonymous reporting from a database that you can't affirm. It's from an anonymous source. I mean, this is crazy. In fact, elect new leadership. You need people. And I'm not saying anything against Clint Pressley. I don't know exactly where he stands on all this, but I just think you need leadership, though, that is going to aggressively fight this kind of thing. It's been a disaster for a long time. Their Caring Well initiative, that goes back to J.D. Greer, was terrible. It literally says in the material that the SBC paid to have made that the standard of innocent until proven guilty is in a legal setting. But for Christians, we're supposed to love believes all things. It literally says that. And I know of churches where this has been a huge problem, individual churches where this has just destroyed them because they chose to take these claims and treat them honestly in unbiblical ways, because that's ripping the verse out of context from 1 Corinthians 13. It really has nothing to do that. It's not about legally finding a burden of proof. That is love believes all things, is a part of a larger context describing how to use spiritual gifts in the context of the church. And so it's ripping it out to put it in a more legal type of context, and then to tell people, well, in a legal this is not an illegal context, this is an ecclesiastical context. Honestly, the government's given the sword. If someone's breaking the law, if someone's violating, and these laws are on the books, if they're committing crimes, that's where you take this kind of stuff. Doesn't mean you don't handle things in the church as well when there's sin, because it's also sin, but you have to, if someone's actually abusing someone else, you have to go through that process. So yeah, I understand there's all the objections about, hey, in my town, everything's corrupt and stuff. We'll take that on a case by case. The situations I know of that mishandled this stuff weren't those situations. But anyway, getting back to the SBC stuff. So I posted it on my X account, the whole decision there. So Rachel Den Hollander decides, and she's one of the lawyers who has been, I think, probably more than anyone else, front and center on this stuff, trying to, how would I put it, convince the SBC that they ought to do what just happened in Tennessee. And so she writes this thread and she says, it has been almost 6 years and counting since several of us who work in this field repeatedly raise concerns. What field is that? Legal field, field grievance. We've raised concerns, abuse. I mean, it's an industry at this point. We've raised concerns to leaders that the lack of clear processes, measurable benchmarks and standards and appropriate communication strategy within the credentials committee would create serious harm. And again, the credentials committee So there, she wants the credentials committee to boot churches, basically. Like, they should have this oversight that the SBC, in the SBC, to boot churches that don't meet her standard on this. And they haven't met it, is what she's saying. And that it's creating serious harm. The errors noted in the ruling from a few days ago, which I think I just read, were entirely preventable. They were warned of directly. Sound alternatives were recommended repeatedly. Model systems used in other entities were recommended. This is Rachel, I think, wanting to, she wants to distance herself from the effects, the consequences of this decision. No, okay, so four attorneys who have experience warned of these risks and urge adoption of clear, measurable policies. Okay, I'd love to hear these clear. Let's see. The decision makers left members of the credentials committee, employees, and survivors with a deeply broken system. Okay, so she keeps criticizing it. The robust system necessary to prevent these errors and to protect everyone involved was prevented. This isn't evidence that abuse reform doesn't work. So she's saying, don't draw the wrong conclusion. This is evidence that refusing to listen to us, the experts, basically, that helped design the system hurts everyone. So you must keep listening to me. If you listen to me, then all your problems would go away. Obviously, she didn't say that. I'm paraphrasing my interpretation of it. All right. So Megan Basham responded to this. Megan said, Rachel, you wanted to institute a public database that would label men abusers based on a preponderance of evidence standard that is a little more than requires only better than a 50% chance that the man was guilty. And we talked about this, that this is part of the problem is changing the evidence required, the level of evidence required. Preponderance of evidence is not the same as beyond the shadow of a doubt. This is different. Okay, and this was none of the due process protections that come from our actual legal system. It didn't require an alleged victim to have filed charges, let alone for a legal judgment to have been rendered against the accused. There was no way to execute such a thing without opening the convention up to such defamation suits. This was, in essence, that guidepost, what the guidepost report did and what the credentials committee did in a harangue of church two activists. So she wanted a lesser standard. She got a lesser standard. She wanted a database. She got something akin to a database. And, you know, it wasn't her way. I don't know what her way exactly is. Like, what was it that would have prevented this? But this is the problem. I mean, I think Megan's clear here on what the issue is. It is the same approach we have seen with Title IX on college campuses, and it is bearing the exact same fruit as those Title IX policies. There's a place for victims to turn to justice and to ensure an abuser's crimes become public record. It is our legal system. And here we have the icing on the cake from Boz Tavidian. Boz Tavidian, as you know, his organization was the organization that crafted the Caring Well material back in J.D. Greer's day at the SBC. So this is like 2019, I suppose, somewhere in there. And Boz Tavidian, this is a quote. It literally, this article starts with this, this is a summation from the article, but the journalist says, the only solution for the Southern Baptist Convention to solve its sexual abuse problems is to dismantle the denomination entirely. I kid you not. According to Boz Tavidian, one of the nation's best known attorneys representing abuse survivors. Well, that's great. You know, the Southern Baptist Convention pays you a lot of money. And now you're saying, you know what, 6 years later or whatever it is, you should dismantle it. They tried to put some Band-Aids on it, and they were more concerned about public perception than anything. When a denomination cares more about public perception than a person, they've lost focus on who Jesus is. Oh, that's really a great low blow there. So they don't, that's the problem with the SBC leadership, is they just don't care who Jesus is. And they're not going to care about the abused people. They're just not going far enough, guys, with this Me Too stuff, because they don't love Jesus enough, and they don't care about people. I mean, this is there a worse accusation in Christianity? This is true partially because of the way the SBC is organized with autonomous churches. But in addition to that, there hasn't been focus of litigation on the SBC itself, he said. It's mostly been litigation on SBC churches. I can tell you the day a court holds that the SBC itself can be held liable for the abuses that occur within a church or within one of the SBC ministries, that will be a huge opportunity for survivors to step forward and begin holding the SBC financially accountable. And maybe that will cause them to make some changes. The SBC will claim every church is autonomous and that they have zero control until a woman becomes the pastor of a local church. Davidian is an outspoken advocate for... So let me just like give you maybe some parallel examples to make you understand how ridiculous this is. If you formed a group, let's say, I don't know, a neighborhood watch group or something, right? And you each have your homes, but you're united for one mission, right? You're going to share resources or create a schedule to go and survey the neighborhood and make sure there's nothing bad happening. I don't know. And let's say like something bad happened in one of the homes and, you know, the police had to come. Let's say legitimately something bad happened, which, you know, domestic abuse, and you were held responsible for it because, well, you guys, you're in common cause. Like you have a mission over here and it was committed with a gun and, you know, or whatever. You guys all go to the gun range, right? To train for this other thing that you're doing, this other, like it would be so far outside the purposes of that organization. It would be like, you're on your own, man. Like we didn't agree to that. We're not taking responsibility for things outside of our purview. Sure, we want to protect your home, but the terms weren't that we were going to protect everyone in the home from someone who's committing a domestic abuse in the home or something like that. Like this was about other threats. And sure, we went to the range and sure, we, encouraged gun ownership or whatever, but like, you know, you're on your own on that, right? Maybe that's not the best analogy, but that's the first one that came to my mind. Like take any organization that you could have other member organizations or even people, and it's for a specific narrow purpose, and that is the SBC. The SBC exists for a narrow purpose. It's for missions. It's for theological training. Yes, you have these other entities that support those purposes, like, you know, in retirement investing and things. But it's to serve these two purposes, really. It's ministry-related stuff. When you have a church and it's within the church, it's outside of the purview of the organization and they have a real problem, to hold the SBC responsible for that is to change the very nature of the SBC. It's to make it into a hierarchical organization that it was never meant to be. And that's what you hear Boz Davidian saying. You know, you can't, and if that happens, the golden goose, it just gets bigger. And that is what's happening. That is the process that the SBC is in right now. And that's what has to stop. And I'm hoping that cooler heads can prevail on these things, but it may be too late, to be quite honest. The SBC is in somewhat of a death spiral, and it's still a lot of people though. Here's the thing. Even if they go completely bankrupt, you still have a lot of people in the organization. And they've been bleeding people and bleeding churches, but I don't see that it changing as far as like, it's still the largest Protestant denomination in the country. There's still going to be those people there, but these people don't need to be channeling their efforts into paying these lawyers' fees. They got together for one reason, and that's ministry. And the churches who don't practice these safe standards or have abusive pastors, they're on their own. They need to bear the consequences for that, not everyone else. I mean, by this logic, why don't we just make it that the United States government is responsible for the SBC churches? I mean, we won't really have the end of abuse until the government directly takes responsibility for everything that happens in the country. Why don't we just do that and achieve some kind of, ultimate collectivist solution to all of this. That's what I think, right? And if you don't agree with me, you don't love Jesus and you don't love people, because we know that that's where all the resources are, the collective resources of the country. I mean, how ridiculous does that sound? I mean, that's what you're hearing though. So I will take some questions, cries of outrage, conundrums, and concerns right now. And then we will end the podcast because I'm pretty sure my wife just finished making a pot roast and I need it in my mouth. That's really what I'm trying to say. All right. So what is this question? Oh, should Biden stand trial? Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to say about that. I mean, is he even, he's going to, you know what the defense is going to be. He's got an insanity defense at this point. I don't see a lot of questions. Let's see. Oh, David Morrill came in. The SBC has never been willing to face the unjust accusations of the world that results from insisting on biblical justice rather than giving into the demands of Abuse Incorporated. That's a good way to put it. Abuse Incorporated. David Morrow from Protestia in the chat. He's actually very good on this kind of stuff. All right. Well, I see comments. I don't see a lot of questions. So I think I'm just going to probably end the podcast and we'll go from there. But hey, I appreciate everyone who supports the podcast. I want to say that I will have on Tuesday a Patreon only episode dropping. I'm going to have, so I split this like long 2.5 hour episode into two parts. And it's on Reconstruction in the Civil War, after the Civil War, and that whole era. So I want to let you know about that. I've been toying with how to do this, because for those who don't want to be patrons, you might want just access to that episode, and maybe I'll put a small fee or something. But that's going to be dropping on Tuesday, and I'm going to be doing more of this, hopefully. At least once a month, I want to do some special Patreon-only content. So for this month, that's the Patreon-only content. So you can look forward to that dropping on Tuesday. I will not be at the inauguration, and most of you probably won't either because it's going to be so cold. So I got a free Monday, and I'm going to see what I'm going to do with it because I blocked off my schedule and everything else. And so hopefully, you know, you have a good weekend. I'm excited about mine. I guess that's why I'm saying it. I don't know why I'm telling you all this. But yeah, God bless, and I will see you next week, Lord willing. Bye now.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Less $830 trade-in / promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.